again, and welcome to another episode of the Action Points Podcast. As always, I'm Aaron.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Evan.
Hey, and welcome to episode 42.
Sure. Oh, that should be a special one.
Yeah, the answer to life, the universe, and
everything.
Cliche rehashing of 30-year-old jokes.
Yeah.
Oh!
Zing.
Yeah, it's pretty late, and I am getting pretty cookie, so... Let's.
I always like some pretty cookies.
Pods.
I always realized whenever you start the pod intro, Aaron, you sound a bit like you're just getting out of a chair that requires a bit more effort than it probably should for someone your age.
Let's be honest, we're both heavy dudes. Getting out of chairs is not easy.
I like getting into chairs.
That's true. And staying there. So yeah, Aaron, what you been up to last week?
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of games and reading a lot of comics. I've actually managed to catch up a lot because I was for a brief period working at a different place, which necessitated a longer commute, which meant I read a lot of comics on the train.
Nice.
So that's cool. So the first one I wanted to talk about was Black Science by Rick Remender, Matteo Scalera, and Dean White. Oh man, it's so, so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's very European, is one thing that I noticed, and it's very European cartoony, because the thing that I really like about it is that character designs are quite, they stand out quite a bit compared to some of the designs that you see in...
A bit more stylized.
Yeah, like mainstream comics. Yeah, like his nose is, oh, you can open a can with that nose.
Nice.
Main character.
It's got a little ring pull on the end.
Yeah, it's a little can opener nose.
As in, it has a hole in the middle.
It's got a little lever action.
We milked that joke.
Moving on.
Like condensed milk from a tin can?
Yeah.
Mm. Ah, I managed to get one last drop.
You did. Delicious.
Okay, we'll let that pass.
No, but it's really cool. It's about this anarchist scientist who decides to create a... device that lets him travel to alternate dimensions. Alternate.
Is his name Rick?
No.
Oh, okay.
I actually can't remember his name. It's quite bad.
Poignant.
Yeah, because I remember his wife's name is Sarah. Because he kind of narrates it in first person for a bit. So I remember that a lot more than him. But it's cool. It's a little bit like Sliders. Did you ever watch Sliders?
I often order them for brunch.
Small burgers. Yeah.
Pulled pork slider.
Mmm. Mm. Also, if you ate one of them and it sent you to an alternate dimension.
No, that doesn't happen as often.
Yeah, only when they're really, really good, right?
Yeah.
assuming it's one of the dimensions where everything's better.
But yeah, it is pretty cool. And like, there's a whole team along with him. So the thing has been messed up so that it jumps into different realities at random intervals. And it jumps to random realities as well. So you can't control where you go or how long you stay there for.
Cool.
So they're stuck on this crazy journey through different worlds, and then they realize that one of their party is a saboteur who messed up the equipment.
Cool, so it's kind of like Quantum Leap?
Kind of, but in Quantum Leap, he goes into different people's bodies, right?
Yeah.
That's what I meant by Sliders. It's like Sliders. They had a machine that slid them through different dimensions, and if I'm not mistaken, they don't get to choose where they go.
Neither did the guy in Quantum Leap.
I thought he had some control.
Nope, he had none. And the whole point was him trying to get home, and he didn't know how.
Mm. But yeah, one thing that I really, really like is the alien designs in this one. Well, aliens, but they are just different dimensions. There's fish people, frog people, weird multi-limb thing. There's also one alternate dimension they go to, which is great because apparently the Native Americans are super advanced and are kicking everyone's asses.
Yeah, I'm just looking at those designs. Yeah. I love the mech suits with the, I guess, the headdress and the fake feathers coming off the back. That's very cool.
Yeah, it is really well designed. And yeah, it's just a really cool sci-fi story. And there's a big twist. Well, it's not really a big twist, but like there's some twist right at the end that keeps it super interesting. Because turns out they're not the only travelers. Like he finds versions of himself who have come up with the technology as well. So it's not really that big of a surprise. But yeah, and then in the end, it's hinted that there's a sort of evil that is unleashed into the multiverse because of their jumping. Well, or they bring something from one reality supposedly into the others. So yeah, it is pretty cool. And the art is, like I said, amazing. And you should check it out.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of this like European sci-fi stuff. The stuff that, I mean, the only name that I can think of is Hodorowski. Because I read the Meta Baron stuff. But it is that kind of aesthetic where it's got heavy inks and very iconic kind of faces. Because one thing I noticed, like when you read a lot of American comics, sometimes their faces get very generic.
Yeah.
Like, how would you describe Peter Parker's face?
A cute white kid.
How would you describe Steve Rogers' face?
A cute white kid.
Well, it's not just about that, because there's a lot of white dudes here too. But like, you know, like the main dude, like I say, he has a very noticeable nose.
They don't have bushy eyebrows. They don't have. Yeah, you're right.
It's quite varied. So that's one thing that I noticed that I like. So yeah, check it out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, Google image search comes up with a whole lot of racist stuff
for Black Science.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't seen all that. But I was glad I saw all that artwork. Probably sounds great.
Podcast.
Yeah. I think it might be something that you might like too, Adam.
It looks cool. It sounds cool.
Yeah. I'm trying to, you know, recommend you some sci-fi comic book stuff.
Yeah. No, point taken.
So, Aaron, how's Earthbound going?
Sorry, what's that?
How's Earthbound going?
What's that?
Earthbound, you downloaded it for the Wii U Virtual Console. I believe you've been playing it.
I have no recollection of that, Evan. I believe so.
How's taken? I think we should loop this
how's
Earthbound? A lot.
How's Earthbound going?
You know, Aaron, do you have any comics that are just kind of like Netrunner? Just actually, are there cyberpunk comics?
Are you kidding?
There must be, right? Of course. Like proper cyberpunk, as in like Gibson-esque, not like high concept stuff.
I don't think there's anyone that treats it the same as Netrunner with all the abstraction of the ice and everything.
Yeah, that's more
which
like
is part of
80s,
the really cool
late 80s cyberpunk stuff where before they had the internet, before there was something concrete that was kind of like what they were talking about, everything was moving through the matrix and encountering ice.
Mm.
Oh, but not just that. You know, I like how like the ice, they have this abstracted art for it. Like the chimera and the
they're all based on very real world concepts.
Yeah.
These virtual abstract things.
The samurai warrior thing for the Jinteki ones.
Yeah.
The katana and the shuriken as ice. That's pretty cool.
Someone must have made a Gibson tried to adapt one of his works into a comic.
I think it's just kind of out of favor. Eventually, the pendulum will swing. Maybe because now a lot of people are playing Netrunner. In 10 years, you'll see lots of cyberpunk inspired things.
It's kind of weird that 80s, like general aesthetics of the 80s, I'm really not a fan of in like movies and music and everything, but I really like 80s sci-fi. I think that's kind of strange, but even like 80s Japanese sci-fi, Akira, stuff like that, 80s Western sci-fi, all the early cyberpunk, stuff like that. I don't know, it's very strange.
I guess because the 80s are close enough to where we are right now that the understanding of the technology is similar, but they're still kind of not naive, but like it's still pretty out there that it doesn't have that jadedness that we have now.
Mm. Did you like Ghost in the Shell, Adam?
Yeah, I did. I actually very much like that.
Yeah.
I think one of the things about the 80s, that 80s sci-fi that I quite like is the sci-fi I really like most of all is I like seeing how they got it wrong, the predictions of the future, how... that's why I really like retro sci-fi 50s stuff and 60s. You're seeing how they got it wrong. And the 80s is kind of, it's before the internet, before the home computer revolution. I think it's just kind of, it's quite close to where we are now, but they still got a lot of stuff wrong.
I like seeing where they inadvertently predicted future stuff as well.
Yeah, some of them got, it's like there are certain concepts that were very close, very closely gotten, but... By the way, just random, completely tangential kind of sci-fi type thing. Did you know there was Bell Labs invented a picture phone in the 70s, I think, 60s and 70s? They marketed this thing that was like a little video phone and you could actually have video chats with people on your telephone.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that.
It was a complete flop because it was really expensive and they were charging a lot for the service and everything. But I had no idea. I always thought that video calling was kind of something that only came about recently.
There you go.
Well, we always knew there was video conferencing facility. I don't know. I always thought there was like rich people had video conferencing facilities.
But, I guess. Not sure.
It's only become prevalent lately.
Yeah. One of the weird things is they had a little, on this video phone, they had a little slide attachment, so you could send people slides and paper documents along the video phone. So it's like a mechanism by which we can send documents to each other and share them over a kind of distributed network.
Yeah.
Isn't that an interesting idea?
Like, you remember car phones?
I actually don't.
Do you, Evan?
Yeah.
Young child.
But I will remember them imminently when I look them up.
None of the people I knew had them. But
no, they were a thing.
They were a thing, right? Before handphones. And my dad used to have one of those big ass bricks with the antenna sticking out.
Yeah.
So this was like a phone that could use your car as the antenna, like the metal chassis.
Is that right? I don't know.
I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, I think TV Tropes had a term for like all this like 50s sci-fi. They call it Z-Rust.
Okay.
Yeah, so stuff that looked super futuristic back then, but then looks retro to us now.
Yeah.
Like that weird phenomenon where you see someone wearing a shiny suit kind of thing. Like, oh, so retro. But, you know, back then it was what they thought people would wear in the future.
Yeah, retro futuristic.
Yeah, and then I think Z-Rust is also like, sometimes when you read a story and it's like, oh, yeah, this was back before people realized there would be common cellular technology. And they think in the year 2000 we'll still be using wires and shit.
There are old Asimov sci-fi stories where
Asimov,
where they've got these like the humans are talking to this big suit. They're operating this intelligent AI that runs their spaceship or something, and they're operating it using punch cards.
Yes, I remember. Yeah, and what's the name of the? He always used this supercomputer, Metavac.
Yeah.
Yeah, Metavac used ticker tape.
Yeah. It's so weird. That was like, it's one of the first things about those technologies that changed, but it was, I don't know, maybe at the time it was very hard to predict.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you think about it, right, how long did we have CDs for? Not very long, right?
Like,
in the grand scheme of things.
Well, I mean, if you consider optical media in general being pretty much dead now, for computers at least, 25 years? Do we have 25 years?
Yeah, maybe.
Because I remember even back in like the mid-90s, you wouldn't buy games on a disc because that was too expensive to make. You'd buy them on a floppy because they fit on one.
It's also really weird looking at what technology went where, like got popular where. Because do you guys have Laserdisc?
I've seen it.
We completely didn't get Laserdisc.
Yeah.
We went straight from VHS to DVD.
Yeah, because we had Laserdisc and then a video CD.
VCD, yeah.
Yeah.
We only had VCDs in the sense that my grandfather brought them back from Taiwan.
Yeah, all the the pirates.
He goes, hey, check this out. They're like DVDs, but crappy quality, and they cost a dollar.
Yeah.
But if you went to like a video rental store in Malaysia, would they be selling VCDs and Laserdiscs and all that?
You can still get VCDs, but they're all DVDs now. Laserdiscs have been gone for ages as well. But I still remember renting Laserdiscs when I was a kid.
So you could rent them? Because I don't think none of the rental stores here ever stocked them. I'm pretty sure they went straight from VHS to DVD.
Yeah.
Oh, what did I watch on Laserdisc? I think Terminator I watched on Laserdisc.
Are you sure that wasn't Kumail Nanjiani?
Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Shut your face, man. I actually had a Laserdisc machine.
Are you sure that wasn't Kumail Nanjiani? I'm just checking here.
I think I watched Honey, I Shrunk the Kids as well on Laserdisc.
Wow.
Oh, they were huge. They were like vinyl massive. Size.
Yeah, and vinyl, you have A and B sides.
Yeah.
It's like VHS, but dumb.
Yeah.
But bigger. Yeah. Because you couldn't record anything, whereas with the VHS, I had plenty of empty tapes where I could, you know, record Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah. I used to try and record every Pokemon episode.
Yeah, I never had continuous episodes.
Yeah. My parents made me go to school.
I never watched anything on Betamax either, but did you guys ever have Betamax?
No.
That was like a competing VHS technology that eventually lost out. But it was that this VHS thing that was meant to be higher picture quality and everything like that.
Oh my god, Evan.
Yeah.
This might segue into what you might want to talk about, but I've been giving Evan anime recommendations from when I used to watch a lot of it, and that's probably around 2008 to 2010 is when I was really active watching anime. And one of them was Kanagi, and they had a joke about Sony, because didn't Sony back the Betamax?
Yeah.
I don't recall.
I think Sony created Betamax.
Yeah, it's a Sony.
I guess HD DVD will be our version of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, funnily enough, Sony owns Blu-ray, so they won that.
At least they backed the right horse eventually.
Yeah.
of course, they flooded the market with their Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we're about to get a whole... It's going to be a whole new boom, because previously you'll have people who just owned a DVD player and an Xbox 360.
Mm.
Everyone who still maintains that, who now upgrades to an Xbox One, all of a sudden has a Blu-ray player. So it's just going to... Yeah, it's going to boom.
And then we'll stop using optical media entirely.
Yeah.
The problem with HD DVD is it just doesn't sound like a big enough upgrade. Yeah. Blu-ray sounds like a next-gen technology, whereas going from DVD...
Yeah, oh, sweet, it's like a ray, but blue.
Yeah.
But HD DVD just sounds like, what, a slightly better version of what you already had? It's hard to get excited about that.
Also, the name for my Everybody Loves Raymond porn.
Blu-ray. I can't believe that took me so long.
Yeah, it took a while. I was thinking HD rim.
In any case, yeah, so what have you been watching, Evan?
Yeah, no, nothing. No, I'm just kidding. So yeah, based on a few recommendations that Aaron made, the first one that I checked out majorly recently, because I'd been watching Free, which is pretty great.
Oh, 50% off was so good.
Yeah, love it. 50% off is basically a recut, redub of Free, which is a swimming anime. It's fairly typical, but it's just well done. The characters are great. Anyway, based on that, Aaron made the recommendation for Umisho. Can you remember what the full name is?
I don't. Sorry.
Well, I can't, but Google can. It's Kenko Zenrake Suiebu Umisho, which is literally Wholesome Nudist Swim Team Umisho.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that name until I believe Adam pointed it out after the fact. But yeah, I'd ask specifically, is it really pervy? Because it's mostly female characters. And
when you said pointed it out, I looked it up on Wikipedia and just read out the first thing I saw.
Yeah, Wholesome Nudist Swim Team. Yeah, okay, wow. But yeah, Aaron's response was, oh, look, you know, they'd have a few jokes in that vein played for, you know, a few scenes like that played for laughs, but not really. Basically, every single episode has at least one woman who is stripped against her will. Not in a rapey sense, but in a accidentally her clothes come off.
Gotcha.
Every 30 seconds, there's like flashing of some description, cutting to a guy's face and bleeding nose. It's nonstop fan service. It's ridiculous. But I was just saying to Aaron before, I can kind of understand after finishing the last episode, there are, like, the characters are really strong. The plot outside of all the perviness actually has some development. And you're left with a kind of sense that the characters were more than just, I don't know, for ogling. And it was quite good. They've got a whole lot of tropes and character archetypes in there, but they've got some really fun characters, and it's nice to watch the main character grow from being a bit of an ignorant idiot. I still found his characterization a bit problematic because his ideal woman was kind of super sexy and but also super reserved and nervous about sex and stuff. So the virgin whore dichotomy.
Yeah.
He really liked this girl, but as soon as this girl said, you know what, I actually like looking at dudes, he was like, oh, I don't think she actually could have possibly said that. Or at one point she says, I'd like to touch someone of the opposite sex. And he kind of just wipes it from his memory going, there's no way such a pure and amazing person would say something that base because she's too good for that. So that was, I found that to be problematic more so than all the flashing. And there are so many scenes where girls just grabbed each other's boobs and it's like, oh, yours are bigger. Oh, yours are smaller. Oh, how can I make mine bigger? I'm like, wow, these guys really know how to write female characters. It's like a few times lots of times I sent screenshots to to you guys on the chats. So many issues. But I could totally understand how, you know, watching it nearly 10 years ago, I guess, if it was 2008 or 2000, I don't know. When did it come out?
I think it was 09.
Okay, well, we're not up to 19 yet.
I am definitely not Googling it.
2007.
Oh, yeah, but I don't think I watched it until 2009.
Yeah, okay. Oh, wow. And the front cover of the manga is... Oh, no, that's the promotional artwork. It's just got her completely starkers grinning on the front. Basically, I find a lot of character designs, they just swap out hairstyles and boob size. So I guess it's both sports and harem, really, in terms of genre. But yeah, that was an interesting experience. Only like 13 episodes long.
Yeah, look, in my defense, I had forgotten how pervy it was.
Yeah, super pervy. Every episode. But, yeah. Oh, so much fun. Anyway, and the other one that I've kind of... I'm nearly at the end of the first season, and I think there are four, is Minamike,
mm-hmm.
which Aaron plugged to me as being kind of like Yotsubato, except focusing on the three sisters, which I guess is fair enough. It's kind of slice of life. It's a lot more
high energy.
Yeah, a lot more high energy than Yotsuba. And the dynamic between the middle and the youngest sister, it can get quite violent and lots of animosity.
Slapstick. And,
yeah, lots of
slapstick violence.
Yeah, definitely. And the stupidity of the middle sister yeah. is played for some ridiculous plot devices. It's just, you know...
It's not always stupidity, but like her obliviousness.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at with stupidity, yep. I guess. But yeah, it's enjoyable. Every episode so far has been really fun. Looking forward to watching the rest of the seasons. And it's just good to have on when Bub's asleep or when she's screaming and I'm carrying her to rock her to sleep.
Mm.
Yeah, they've been really good. I'm looking forward to... I also started watching Maria Holick, but I'll chat more about that when I've seen more than two episodes. Thanks for those recommendations. They were lots of fun.
No problem. Yeah, well, with Minami, the parallel I drew was just there's three sisters.
And the older one is beautiful.
They have kind of similar dynamics in that one is the silly one and is the middle one. Because in Yotsuba, Fuka is
the middle one.
Yeah, she's a bit flighty, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas this one, I forgot how crazy amped up
Kana
was, yeah.
Yeah. Chucky is kind of terrifying. The youngest one. She's got these half-open eyes and this really monotone to her voice. She's quite a scary character when she's being aggressive.
Mm.
And she also speaks in a kind of worldly way, but completely not understanding. Whereas the middle one kind of basically just asks the nearest person for advice on stuff she doesn't understand and then takes it as gospel, you know, which plays out to comedic effect. And the oldest one basically looks on in embarrassment the whole time. It's a fun show. It's nice. I'm enjoying it.
Cool.
But yeah, quick plug, if I may. I downloaded Crimson Clover World Ignition, which is a pretty great title. I highly recommend it. If you haven't played any bullet hell shooters before, this one's a great one just to have as an example. The difference between the difficulty levels is substantial enough that you'll be able to play it no matter what level you're at. The hardest difficulty level is just impossible. It's crazy. You know, it's got a few different gun types and the controls are fantastic. Graphically, it's just a really good example, a nice example of bullet hell done well. And it was just recently released. I think it originally, like most of these, was a Comiket homebrew. So it's a homemade one. Maybe, I don't know, 2009 or something. It's getting old now, but it was just released on Steam maybe a week ago. But that's, definitely check it out.
Yeah, I think Steam has been doing that, right? They've been releasing some of the older, like, Dojinsoft games.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I'll just have a look. There were a few that I played recently.
Wasn't Racketeer?
No, that wasn't. Danmaku Unlimited 2, that was. Ah, here we go. Mitsurugi Kamui Hikae, which is basically an arena slash-em-up with panty flashing, which is basically what arena slash-em-ups were missing, it turns out.
Yeah, they should be arena flash-em-ups. With panty slashing.
Shimabon! But, that one's quite fun. The controls are nice. The character design is a bit ridiculous. The dresses are very, very short, and it doesn't flash heaps, thankfully. But be warned, there are problems. But yeah, that one is definitely a homebrew.
You heard of Zettai Ryoki?
Possibly?
It's the absolute limit, or Zettai Ryoki. Is the area of skin between the skirt and the stockings or the socks.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to have the right proportion of each.
I'm not sure how familiar either of you are with bullet hell shooters. I'm sure you've played quite a few, Aaron.
Not really. Yeah.
It's like the oldest type of computer game out there.
Kind of. It's a variation on the oldest, the old scrolling shoot 'em up. And it basically evolved into a twitch kind of dodging patterns of bullets.
There's the very first one. Look up a game called Space War. like the game type is old enough that the first one existed back before they had square TV screens. It's on like a circular display.
I thought you were going to say before they had more unique titles, when you could call something Space War.
That too.
Wasn't some of the early golf games just called golf?
Yeah, and there was golf. Tennis.
I remember that.
And there was, yeah. And there was Adventure. That was a game.
Do you guys ever remember the times in the internet when you, if you wanted to find something, this is before Google, if you wanted to find something, you would just type www.whatyouwantedtofind.com.
Yeah, and hope like, it was a thing.
You want to know about horses? Type in www.horses.com.
Yeah. I'm going to see what that has now.
Horses.com. Oh, wait, I spelled it wrong.
No, you didn't.
There's
I
get no it. W.
Oh, it's got horse supplies. There you go. Now it's a shop.
Who knew?
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, what I was going to say is, and I'm sure I've shown Adam some, but it's interesting that there's a genre, which there's also an associated genre of anime where it's like basically mecha or bullet hell or whatever. But the main avatar is a schoolgirl, which can, for some reason, shoot missiles and lasers and alternate between them.
That is very strange.
It is really strange.
Where does she shoot them from?
Yeah, that's the question. Because it's just, often it's just, if it's a side-scrolling one, she's just, looks like she's either on a broomstick or floating midair. You know, maybe her hair's rippling, maybe she's a static.
It's like the worst case
sprite.
Of crabs ever.
there are missiles firing out. One of the Death Smiles was one of the ones that I showed, or Death Smiles 2, I think it was one of the ones that I showed Adam one time. And it had all these hyper-sexualized characters. One was like a goth one with massive breasts and a tiny skirt. And you could see her underwear and she was wearing black garter belt and stockings.
I think you could call them tits at a certain point.
I'm not talking about birds. I'm talking about her breasts. Anyway, and I was like, yeah, that's problematic character design. Then you read the description. And
it's actually a guy.
No. She was 14. And the oldest of the cast
was 14, guys?
14. The oldest of the cast was 17 and the youngest was 12.
Oh, no.
So bad.
And they were all hyper-sexualized. And I was like, you know, up until the point, still has issues. Then you read that and you're like, So yeah, Google Death Smiles and look at the character design.
Maybe Japanese 12-year-olds just develop differently.
It's funny how like all of the game genres that are now pretty much dominant only in Japan are quite strange like that. Bullet hell dating sims, you know.
Yeah, it's
well, dating sims have made a crossover to Western gaming.
The inevitable romance plot lines in every damn RPG.
Yeah. I've just
wasn't Mass Effect just Alien Dating Simulator 2014?
It is if you believe Fox News.
Oh, that's true. That is true. Why would they lie to us? I've just linked you guys to the official art from the game.
Link the listeners.
Really great podcasting material, Evan. Also.
Yeah, definitely.
That's okay.
You guys know I'm terrible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the website name is Dual Shockers.
What?
Oh, dear.
What?
So, yeah, for scintillating podcast material, Evan has posted a link on our Skype chat.
Yeah, which we
the website name is Dual Shockers. Come on.
It's a gaming site.
Yeah.
Do you remember those character designs, Adam?
I think so. I remember totally weird, over-sexualized schoolgirl bullet hells that you showed me, and I was thinking very strange.
Yeah. Question is, why does Evan own them? Why? Why does Evan own them?
That is the question. Problematic podcasts.
But it's also quite interesting. I always thought it's quite interesting the differences between Japanese indie game development and elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because I don't know enough about it to really want to talk about it, but I'm hoping to be able to cover this topic one day.
Yeah.
With someone who's played more of these games or has an idea. Because I know there's a community of, like, you know, like people creating these kind of bullet hells and dating sims.
Mm.
And a lot
I'm really looking forward to the re-release of Hatterful Boyfriend.
Visual novels.
Yeah, for Adam's benefit, if he hasn't heard. It's the one where you date pigeons.
What?
Yeah, you
is
date
that like
pigeons.
The Japanese equivalent of Goat Simulator in terms of taking the piss?
Kind of. Apparently it's quite good.
I think in Japan, Goat Simulator would be too mainstream.
Yeah.
You'll be like, goats, we use cthuloids.
I think there was that Girls Like Robots game was Japanese, I think. You know that puzzle game where you have to place...
Yeah, was that Japanese?
I believe so. I might be wrong.
Do you remember that DS game, the witch-touching one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of this, Adam? It's called Doki Doki Majo Shimpan.
Okay.
And apparently there are hidden witches in your school and you need to figure out which girls are witches, and you do that by touching them until you find a witch mark somewhere on their body. You play it on the DS, the touchscreen.
Of course.
Yeah.
That.
Monster Mon Piece is the latest one, if you recall, which is a PS Vita game which requires you to make masturbating kind of motions on the screen. You hold it vertically and rub your thumb as fast as you can from the top to the bottom. Yeah, not even kidding. On the girl characters, and in order to power them up, and each evolution of the character shows less and less clothing. So it's a wanking game.
I might have been wrong about Girls Like Robots, by the way.
Yes, you were wrong. I was wrong. That, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's made by a company called Pop Cannibal, or Adult Swim, actually.
Initially, it was Adult Swim, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They're just publishers, essentially.
That's okay. No, we can cut that section out. If you can hear this section, Aaron hasn't done his job properly.
That's true. I've just linked you to...
I'm going to leave it in.
I've linked you to an article about Monster Mon Piece, which has a great GIF, if you just scroll down.
Also good podcasting material.
Yeah, as I just said. We're going to put it in the notes anyway.
If you do this, like you just continually link our stuff and put them in the description, I can imagine coming across the podcast being very strange. See this whole bunch of links about masturbatory DS games and
and problematic character
design.
Are you enjoying that GIF? Because I'm just watching it on repeat. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I just made it to the monster designs for that game.
Yeah. It's bad, isn't it?
Oh dear, that's terrible.
It's getting okay. They're the ones.
Do I need to close this and delete all my browser history?
Well, the FBI will be on your door. Just kidding, we're not in America. Those designs which you just looked at there are the ones that didn't make the cut.
Now, here's this for great apologist writing. There's a great game beneath Monster Mon Piece's awkward anime stroking is the name of the title.
Yeah.
Someone's an apologist.
Yeah. Or wanking. But yeah, just look at that GIF and don't stop looking at that GIF. It's pretty good, isn't it?
I like how the character designed for Cockatrice is straddling a phallic object.
I'm not looking at it in that much detail, I gotta be.
You're trying not to. I think Goblin is the scariest one.
Yep.
Cool. So closing that tab. Deleting from history.
No, okay, to clarify, the ones you were looking at were the ones that didn't make the Western release. So these are the third evolution, I believe. Third or fourth? Third. Third evolution form that was cut because these images were deemed to be just too sexual. Yeah,
they made it into the Japanese release, though, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they're in the Japanese release.
Pretty much.
The girls start off with more clothing and then get less.
I know. Well, at some point, you've just got to treat it with the same kind of regulation that you treat adult content with, like adult porn, basically. At some point, it's just porn.
Yeah, but it's not sold as porn. That's the problem.
In Japan, surely that would have been sold as porn.
No, but to a Western audience, if you sold this game, there's no way that a parent...
You wouldn't sell it in EB, that's for sure.
Well, no, that's the thing. It's going to be sold in stores, regular stores.
Wow. Okay, yeah. No, that is strange.
Yeah, so you've got to kind of go, do we need maybe like a clear R rating?
Yeah.
it's confronting anyway. I'm glad I could...
It's M for masturbation.
Like, this literally in this one. It's such a good technique. But yeah, I was reminded of it because you mentioned the witch rubbing game where you had to touch the witches to find their
secret. At least it's teaching you to use the thumb.
Yeah.
Because, man, I wish I could have gone back to 13-year-old me and...
Wait, are we actually talking about wanking techniques?
Well, just, you know, there's five fingers. Use them, dude.
I do.
Cool. Awkward silence.
Yeah, speaking about going back in time to, you know, give sexy advice to your past self, I just read, I've actually read it before because I think she put it up online, but Jess Fink's We Can Fix It. I just got the physical version. I think it's also an old one because I think it was printed in 2013. But it is great. It's a really cool little... It's built as a time travel memoir. So the framing device is that she takes a time machine and goes back in time and visits herself in the past at the beginning to reminisce about all the sexy times. But then later on, she goes into, you know, all the good and bad times that sort of shaped her early life. Yeah, so it's a really well-written, well-done comic with very cute art. And it's definitely worth checking out. I think you'll like it, Evan.
Awesome. Mm. I'll get right on it.
Yeah, I think if you can spare the money, it's always good to support good artists.
Evan's wallet gets a little bit lighter.
Oh, it's bad. This has been a bad month. Blu-ray releases, Kickstarters. It's just, yeah, bad.
Well, how about you, Adam? What have you been up to?
Finishing study. I've been getting back to finally getting some actual playtime out of my 3DS, which I bought for traveling a while ago.
Yeah.
The way Nintendo takes on multiplayer is quite interesting, the way they've kind of sanitized it. You can chat with people in your group kind of when you're in a community, which is like a server lobby, but you can only say the things that there's like a set number of. It's this really awkward conversation because you only have like 10 choices to choose from.
Oh.
10 pre-made sentences.
That's like Hearthstone.
Haven't played.
Oh, it's interesting because Blizzard has done that as well in Hearthstone, where they limit your communication options.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it actually makes the online play experience a bit better in a way, like for me, because I don't have to worry about people talking dumb shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. There's not much I would really want to say to a bunch of randoms I'm playing Mario Kart against, except like, you know, did you like that Blast Blue Shell? Suck it.
did you see the Luigi riding dirty?
No.
Luigi's death stare after he green shells someone.
Is this going to be another podcast link in the Skype chat?
No.
This has been a good episode for them.
Yeah, actually, I'll link you to this Kotaku article. Yeah. I'm just kidding, yo.
No, but seriously, you know, you can check us out. We put up all the links to all the things we talk about in the show notes. Sometimes I also put in bonus links. Yeah, and you can check them out at theactionpointspodcast.com. See, I worked in a plug there.
Excellent.
That's good.
Excellent work.
Okay.
And we also...
In the time it took you to get that plug, I've watched the video that we were just talking about.
Very good.
What else have we been doing? Well, I've been watching Rick and Morty from start to finish very quickly.
Oh, cool.
Which I know you guys have as well.
Yeah, Evan and I actually talked about Rick and Morty a little bit in one of the other episodes. But that was before Evan had finished season one. And oh man, some of the episodes towards the back end of season one are so amazing.
But it was also missing my keen eye of analysis. So therefore
yes,
not worth
yes.
listening to or referencing
wholly
again, really.
Incomplete. Wholly incomplete.
It's really good. Watching it again, there are some bits that are just kind of, I don't know, sometimes I wonder if they're trying to be a little bit unnecessarily gratuitous.
Yeah.
Oh, so much of it is just embarrassing.
this bit's like, well, okay, so I guess spoilers for anybody, go watch Rick and Morty. It's very good.
Yeah,
watch it.
It's amazing.
Online pretty much with ads on the official website. So yeah, you don't even need to pirate it.
RickandMorty.com!
Times 100. Okay. The bit where the snail guy tries to abuse Morty in the toilet.
Oh, Jelly Bean.
The Jelly Bean guy, that's right.
Yeah.
And then Rick and Morty more or less kills him with the, doesn't like beats him up with the toilet seat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's a bit.
And then, like, but that's so good, though.
Yeah, but it got really, really real.
Yeah, because, it got really like, dark in the service
Rick's
of
having,
a not massive gag.
Yeah, well, no, because, like, Rick's having a good time. He's, like, feeling bad about how he's hassled Morty the whole way. And he's like, yeah, I'm gambling. I'm actually having fun, even though you were the leader. But then he realizes, because, like, Morty's like, I want to get out of here. You know, I don't feel comfortable. And then he sees the guy kind of stumbling out of the bathroom behind. He's like, and you can see it on his face that it dawns. And Rick's like, oh. Yeah.
I guess.
And he kind of like, oh, you know, let's go back to the town, give them the money, and then we'll go home.
Yeah. Did you watch the after credits bit, Adam?
Yeah, I did, about the remembering him for the jelly bean he was meant to be instead of the jelly bean he was.
That was fantastic. And then it pans out, you've got that awful statue of him with his hand on the kid's shoulder holding the balloon.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not bad. I just feel like that whole episode should come with a big trigger warning at the start.
Yeah.
I mentioned, like, there's a lot of misogynist language. A bitch is thrown around. And they mention rape probably more than they need to. Like the Pirates of the Pancreas.
Yes.
Yeah,
There were a few bits sort of like that, and it made me a little bit uncomfortable in a way.
The whole thing made me uncomfortable. Like,
I think it was uncomfortable and I'm totally fine with them being kind of super dark, but it didn't make me uncomfortable in that way. It made me uncomfortable in the sense of like, ooh, that's, you know, maybe they don't need that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I don't know. Some things affected me, and I wonder if that was my own life experience, because it does go to very dark places. Mm. And I'm like, I don't feel comfortable.
But I don't know. I guess it kind of harks back to the whole conversation about when you need trigger warnings and things, and how, to what degree you should just not do certain things.
Yeah, because
for that reason,
that scene was played pretty straight.
Yeah, it was. They didn't have, like, you know, your imaginary laugh track in the background. Yeah. It was a moment of realization, and it was a double punch, because Rick was coming, you know, he was getting over his ego. He's like, you know what, I've been crap to Morty, and I'm actually having a good time. I'm going to be decent. And then it's got the double punch of him kind of working out, oh, he's just been molested in the bathroom. None of it was for gags, and except for the end bit.
Yeah, there's a few bits like that. There's definitely a lot of the misogynist language. I don't know, maybe this is me trying to excuse the show, but a lot of it is kind of done with a knowing nod and a wink, I guess.
Yeah.
There's some that probably isn't. And they try to, they hang a lampshade over certain bits of it. They make reference to sort of what they're doing.
Yeah.
The thing about, like, when people overuse the, like, bitch, it's a double thing, because sometimes it's going to sound really bad when I say it, but part of it is not, part of it is actually kind of like making fun of, like, street language.
Yeah.
With racial connotations.
Are you talking about urban people?
Yeah.
That's what we call them, right? Urban people.
Honestly, I've never heard that before, but that's brilliant. I'm taking that with me.
What haven't you heard?
It's like urban people. Question mark. That's from,
what was I watching recently? I think it might have been a Community thing. Yeah. So similar writer, but he goes, he said something like, you know, someone like you would know all about that being so, and then he pauses and then goes, urban? That's bad.
Yeah.
But in that reference, that in the bit with the horror guy, it's Wisdom School, Scary Terry.
Yeah.
Like they can be kind of like, man, that guy sure says bitch a lot.
Yeah.
They do make reference to some of the bits like that, but I don't know. There are some bits they probably could tweak if they were a little bit more conscious of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we haven't actually explained what the show is about. we just talked about molesting jelly beans in the bathroom. Basically, the show is a kind of, it was inspired by
Back to the Future
relationship.
It was based on a short film by one of the pair,
by Justin Roiland. Yeah.
Justin Roiland, yeah, who does the voice for Rick and Morty. But it was called Doc and Marty, so it was using the same names, except Marty was spelled M-H-A-R-T-I, I believe. So yeah, it's basically the dynamic of the crazy older mad scientist with the young boy, but they've flipped it around. The old mad scientist is completely reckless and an alcoholic. And
a sociopath.
And a sociopath and an egomaniac. And the kid is really dumb. Really, really thick.
And just kind of like...
And scared the whole time.
Slowly more traumatized throughout the show.
Oh, one of the funniest jokes was when Rick breaks into his room.
Oh, yeah. With the knife.
Yeah. Yeah, Morty, you're such a hero.
Are you a clone? Tell me, are you a clone?
Oh man, what a life.
I love that.
It's also, the relationship is also very similar to like the Doctor Who one, the doctor and the companion if the doctor was a bit more psychotic.
Yeah, that's why I get a very Doctor Who-ish vibe from the theme song.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, definitely. It feels like that.
The stuff that I like from Rick and Morty is the really high concept stuff. Not so much the jokes in between, which is kind of why I liked Community as well, and it makes sense because it shares Dan Harmon as a creator.
Mm.
So for Rick and Morty, there's the stuff like the Love Potion Rick's D9 episode where, spoiler alert, they jump to a whole new dimension.
Well, they abandoned this one.
Yeah.
Because they've completely wrecked it. So they jump to another dimension where they're just about to die, and then they just take over from the other ones and they bury their own corpses. So
yeah.
It gets poignant. And the music in that at the end, where he's just kind of, you see his eyes kind of deaden and he's like, what have I done? What's worth anything? What is the world?
Yeah.
It's really heavy.
And like he stares at Summer and is like, who are these? Does that really count as his sister anymore? It's not. Yeah. It's someone else.
Yeah, and I had actually missed that episode on my first viewing for some reason. I don't know how. And I watched that other one where he explained about how he buried his own corpse and stuff in a couple of episodes later. And he uses it to good effect.
Yeah.
To basically reassure his sister of the chaos of the universe. And basically what he's learned is not to be scared and to just live in the moment. And that's why he's watching TV.
Yeah.
And going, you know, this TV is amazing. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm not going to worry about what could have been. And it's quite poignant. But I missed out on that the first time. I thought it was just a random throwback.
It also has a good meta joke in that. Yeah, we can do this about 3-4 times tops.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Because Rick breaks the fourth wall quite a bit towards the end.
Yeah. He always, like, he talks, like, at the end of the season.
He only does it in, like 2 or 3 episodes, actually.
But whenever he does, none of the other characters know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
They always go, well, what's he doing?
But they all, like,
only he's the
camera.
One who can see us.
Yeah.
They still look at the camera.
Yeah, they look in the direction he's looking, but they clearly can't see the audience like he can.
But why that episode was good, because up till then, everything has been treated pretty lightly. Like, Rick essentially kills a guy in the first episode, and it's got...
He does.
There's no relation to any Latin student.
Yeah, they want to make it racial, but I'm not going to let them take it there.
Yeah, but then, like, it's all played pretty light up to then until he messes up everything completely and they jump to a different universe and it's suddenly a serious moment with the slow music in the background. And that whiplash is just, I found that hilarious.
I found it affecting.
Yeah, but I don't know, to me it was like, that was quite a good way to overturn that structure that's been set up. It's a big swerve in that we do play with, like, the consequences of it going dark as well. And actually, one of my favorite episodes is actually the TV episode.
Oh, no, I knew you would say that. I didn't like that one much.
I loved it.
It was, I know, it would have been good if I was really high. That's such a stoner episode.
No, I thought, I think it possibly helps, like, if you listen to a lot of podcasts. I felt like they were
smoking a lot of marijuana.
No, because it was basically them making up things, and you could hear them laughing as they were making it up.
Yeah,
and it was really fun to watch.
Yeah, I think if you're a bit more in the know about, like, the creator, like Dan Harmon does a lot of improv stuff on his podcast. Evan, I know you're listening to the Harmon Country the sections of the podcast, and there's a few times where he brings an audience member up on stage, asks them what
they design a TV show.
They design a TV show from that, and it's so bad. It's terrible, terrible.
It's always bad.
Yeah, but that is essentially what they were doing in that episode. Each
fake
show from a different dimension is just terrible improv by the voice actors.
Yeah.
It's essentially, make up a TV show and keep talking. Because, like, the two brothers one is so
that
obvious.
Was so,
like,
funny.
At the end, he's just laughing.
It's like, actually, it's just called Two Brothers. It just laughs. It's like,
I think I liked it I think it would have been a good gag in a show. They could have kept it going for a while, but a whole episode, it felt like a filler.
But the B plot is so good.
Yeah, like watching
realize. Yeah, it pays off.
Yeah, that's true. That is
a long-running gag about Jerry and Beth.
But that's almost separate to that. Like, it's like they had half an episode and they were like, shit, what do we want to do for this other half?
Yeah.
But it's just improv a bunch of stuff.
The whole point of it is that enjoy the fun, get caught up in, you know, this is where you're at. You didn't become those famous people. This is what you've got, and this is what's really fun. You've got ball fondlers. That's the name of the show for those
who are listening. Hamsters in the Butts universe.
Yeah, ball fondlers. I love how it's got nothing to do with balls.
Yeah.
It's just like a really B-action movie. Yeah. For some reason, there's some animals as well that have guns. But yeah, it's to kind of counterpoint that. So you've got this ridiculousness happening. Why not just enjoy it instead of worrying about what could have been if you had have had that abortion? And then, of course, you know, the poignant moment was that together their life is better than it would have been alone.
Is it though?
Like when he's doing cocaine off strippers with Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Like, well, their life was best in the post-apocalyptic episode. That was when they were happiest.
Yeah, and
without Morty and Rick.
Oh my goodness! And Summer's recreating Jaws in a box.
Yeah,
reenacting. Good. Sorry.
It is a good show.
Yeah,
I want a season two.
Yeah, yeah. It is getting a season two.
It is far too far in the future. Oh, that's the other thing I've been watching. I'm about to jump to something completely different that is not Rick and Morty related at all. Okay,
check out cool. Rick and Morty. RickandMorty.com. 100 years Rick and Morty.
It's good.
Yeah.
Check it out. The other thing I've been watching is all the previous Fours War episodes I hadn't seen before. I stopped watching the show back when I thought it had finished, which was
after
when...
season six, wasn't it?
Yeah, after season six. And then I found out not that long ago, surprisingly, that it had actually had a couple of seasons since because people complained that they liked it so much that they didn't want it to stop. So they've kind of shifted it into a spy thriller. It was previously a mystery detective show set in the Second World War. Yeah. And then in the show, the Second World War ended. So they swapped it into a kind of like a spy MI5 Russian espionage mystery show.
Cold War type.
Yeah. And it's really good. I really like it.
Really?
I mean, shut up, Evan.
Do you like it? I'll be honest, listeners. I love it. It's fantastic.
It's great. It's really good. But I know it's partly because I really like spy stuff. I really like it.
And the characters are so good.
I want more spy stuff. The characters are a lot better. There are a few points where you can tell they've gotten a bigger budget and they've had a sit back and they've thought to themselves, okay, if we're going to stretch this out for longer than we thought we would have to, we're going to have to try to add some more depth to some of the characters.
And we all missed Sam.
Well, they made Sam a lot more kind of realistic. She's not just the kind of bumbling...
Uppity. No, not uppity. Eternally optimistic.
Yeah. The kind
she was
of bubbly,
always really bubbly. Happy and fun.
She was very bubbly and she would always kind of stuff things up, but it would turn out all right. And stuff like that. They've switched it up and made things a little bit grittier, probably, a little bit more high budget. And it's very good. You should watch it. In fact, I would go so far as to say you could probably go and watch season 7 of Foyle's War without having watched the previous ones at all.
Yeah, you could, but why would you? Because you've got
You should totally watch all of the others because they're really good.
Yeah, they are really good.
But it is each episode is basically movie length.
Yeah, they're written by Anthony Horowitz.
What else did he do? He did Artemis Fowl, didn't he?
No.
No.
It was Ian Colfer.
He did another one that was kind of like that. Percy Jackson, one of those.
No, he didn't. He did the that Boy Spy series.
Alex Rider.
Alex Rider. Sorry, I group all of them together in my same kind of like...
The young adult?
Young adult, yeah.
I actually didn't know that, but I was editing the podcast where you mentioned Foyle's War.
Because I've done this before.
So I remember...
That was before I'd watched these extra episodes.
So good. And you managed to get Michelle to watch them all.
I did. She watched them all, and now we're very sad because we don't have any more to watch. Because the next series isn't coming out until 2015.
Yeah, which is deeply depressing.
It is.
Yeah, I'm the same that way with the Dr. Blake mysteries. They were fantastic. Now we got to wait.
Time wait.
Adam, you say you like spy stuff. I've noticed that. I mean, you like the
agents. Spy flavored game.
No, I don't think it's that you like the agents game. I think you liked the theme.
Yeah, I did like the theme.
Yeah, and you like kind of like Netrunners because there's the asymmetrical information and kind of bluffing.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the, you know, the mind games in spy
totally
stories. So what, you know, what about the spy fiction genre is it that you like?
I don't know. I like the
Do you like the gadgety stuff or the...
No, I don't like the gadgety stuff much. I tend to, I don't like the James Bond style of, you know, crazy gadgets and girls and going out there and saving the world kind of stuff. I prefer the kind of... I like that it it's always... And I guess this is part... I'll link it to Cyberpunk in a second. But I like that it's kind of very low-level, low-key, not glamorous. Like, mostly people without lives living in shitty hotels and doing, you know... And it's completely low glam, but it's connected to kind of large scale geopolitical intrigue. That's I like the kind of connection with the very low level grime to the kind of, oh, you know, nation changing. It's got a nice sense of scale. It swaps between very big scale and very small scale very quickly. And I think Cyberpunk kind of does the same thing. It's all the heroes are always anti-heroes and they're kind of basically drug addicts or, you know, you form homeless people or something like that. They're always, but, you know, and everything, but everything always jumps up to this really big scale of, you know, AI taking over, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's why I like that it has a lot of scale in it.
Or like with one person with enough context can take down a country.
Yeah, there's always like it has just a couple of characters who, you know, somehow manage to affect gigantic outcomes.
There's a crucial pieces of information.
Actually, I think that is because I guess this is a spy thing, but I would have liked it anyway because if you've ever read The Tailor of Panama... Or you can go watch it. It's they've made a movie with Pierce Brosnan who plays a completely anti-Bond spy, which is hilarious. But it's basically a story about how some guys lie. He just kind of casual lies that he was telling during his job grow up and explode and expand until eventually it causes an invasion of another country.
Cool.
I think I like stuff like that. I like kind of super low scale stuff that eventually spirals out of control or affects things moving in a big way.
Okay, so you like the more human element?
Yeah, and the way the human element is connected to everything else.
What about like cryptography?
Yeah, I mean stuff like all the World War II. I actually went and visit Bletchley Park. It's very interesting. I'd definitely recommend going if you're ever in England. Go to Bletchley Park. It's very cool.
I think I sent you guys a link to the article about cryptos. The sculpture in the CIA compound that has like three exactly codes.
I think some of them have been decoded, but some haven't.
I think there's four and three have been decoded, and the last one is still being worked on.
It'd be quite funny if it was just random. He's just
a dick.
He's just a dick.
I think cryptography is interesting, but I just don't have the right frame of mind for it. Or not the patience, I guess.
I like it in theory. I've done some cryptography stuff at uni, some subjects and stuff like that. It's kind of...
I was going to ask like whether you've been involved in it professionally.
Not in an employment sense, but I've done some uni subjects on cryptography. And it is very interesting. It's very cool. But it's also... I think what's more interesting is... I find general other kind of computer security like hacking more interesting. The way small bugs can, you know, just some engineer makes a slip up at work and suddenly it has all these massive consequences.
Yeah.
I find that stuff quite interesting.
It's interesting that a lot of the so-called hacking still involves like social engineering.
Yeah, totally. Basically just tricking people into giving you a password. It's so much easier than hacking into people's computers.
Yeah. Like, even that article, that Eurogamer article that I linked to, which I'll link to in the show notes.
the show notes episode, that's what this one is.
The people that are trying to solve the cryptos puzzle, one of the person's approaches was to try and find out as much as they can about the sculptor to see if any emergent themes that he was working on around the same time when he was working on the sculpture. And she went and looked at some of his other interests as well, just to see if there's any clues back into what he would have put into the cryptos thing, so that, you know, you can from context get clues to solve the thing. I thought that was interesting. You still come back to that human element.
Yeah. She's I think it's a narrative kernel that people always come back to when they write stories set in this kind of context. It's just the kind of the guy in his parents' dungeon or parents' bedroom, you know, or his own bedroom in his parents' place. I mean, like, just some super unglam guy who happens to, you know, happens to find the clue that solves everything, or
like Dan Harmon with race and rape. That's just from Rick and Morty.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's what I've been watching.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, so I think that's all the time we have for this episode. We've already talked quite a lot about stuff that you probably won't get a lot of value just from an audio podcast.
Yeah.
But still, thanks for listening so far. And if you have any feedback or, you know, want to check out some of the stuff that we talked about, you can leave us a comment or find the show notes at theactionpointspodcast.com. You can also email us at theactionpointspodcast@gmail.com or find us and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/theactionpointspodcast. And we're also on Google+. And if you want, you can also find me personally on Twitter and Instagram as at Aaron Lime, spelled E-H-R-O-N Lime.
And you can find me at Mo Strange on Tumblr, and Instagram, and Twitter. And I'm Evan Ritchie on Google+. So come find me.
Adam, you need to figure out something to say.
I do need to figure out something to say here. Yeah.
My name is Adam, and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah, my name is Adam, and I'm better than everyone else because I don't use social media.
I don't use Twitter. I'll create a Twitter account and just never post anything in it, just so I can mention it here.
Hi, my name is Adam, and I'll find you.
Yeah, I think that works.
That'll do.
All right, so thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.